to further discuss Birchas HaShachar. We pointed out yesterday there are two basic sections. The section dealing with the process of wake-up, and then the section dealing with identity. Yesterday we spoke about how the process of wake-up is demarcating the gift that Hashem gives us. When that happens, is meant to burst comfort zone, if you will, of hergel meyer leshikha, of taking all these gifts for granted. So if it's bekechivrim, albushavum, and so on and so forth. We'll get back to those brachas in a moment. Let's take a look at the three brachas of identity. I should have photocopied the Gemara for you also, but let's read the Gemara. The Gemara and brachas. You don't have it in front of you. That's what we'll see what we have in front of you in a second. The Gemara in Brachas Daf Samach discusses all the brachas except for Shalosh Sani Goy, Shalosh Sani Yavar, Shalosh Sani Isha. The Gemara in Menachos Daf Mem Gimel Amid Beis, as a tangent, has the following statement: Tanya, Ha'ir Rabbi Meir Omer Chayavar and Levara Shalosh Brachas B'Chol Yom. Rabbi Meir used to say that a person is obligated to make three brachas every day. Eluhem, She'asani Yisrael, and made me a Jew. Shalo asani isha, it didn't make me a woman. Shalo asani boor, but it didn't make me an ignoramus. What if he did? It's interesting. What does it mean? That sounds like, by definition, that every Jew is able to say shalo asani boor. No one could say, it says, ain boor yirei chet, right? No one can be accused of being a boor. Anyway, two out of the three of these brachos, let me rephrase that. No one could be accused of being a fundamental ignoramus. Right? By choice, yes. That's what Chazal say, ain't bor yirei chet, if you're the same word in English, right? Bor. Two out of three of these brachos didn't make it. We don't say she'asani Yisrael. We don't say shalo asani bor. The only one we say is shalo asani isha. Had to pick that one to last. That's the troublemaker, right? Rav Acher by Yaakov Shamei Lebrei Davakam Avarech Shalosh Asani Bor. Rav Acher, the son of Yaakov, heard his son say these brachos, including Shalosh Asani Bor. Omer Le Kuli Hai Nami. You're supposed to praise Hashem every day that you're not a bor. Is that really the proper bracha? Omer Le Elamai Mavarech. So what then he's supposed to say? Interesting Gemara. Sounds like it wasn't a formal legislation that spread everywhere. Otherwise, what's this whole give and take about? Shalosh Asani Eved. That's the way to go. In other words, Shalosh Asani Yisrael, Shalosh Asani Isha, Shalosh Asani Eved. That is a problem there also, because that's not the order in which we say it. And we also don't say Shalosh Asani Yisrael, we say Shalosh Asani Goy. Okay? The Gemara ends even more challengingly. We'll get to the end of the Gemara in a second. So, first let's solve the problem of She'asani Yisrael. So on the marginal, on the margin, just like in our Gemaras, when they have marginal comments pointing out girsa changes, various versions of the Gemara, they point out that the Rambam did not have She'asani Yisrael. The Rambam has Shalosh Asani, I think the Rambam has Shalosh Asani Nochri, if I'm not mistaken. The Tosefta also has these brachos, and Tosefta has Shalosh Asani Goy, Shalosh Asani Eved, Shalosh Asani Isha, the way we say. So where did this bracha She'asani Yisrael come from? In the 19th century, there were Orthodox Rabbanim who came out with articles saying that since the nations of the world have become kinder to us, shall we say, of the 19th century, Kabbal Homer now, relatively, and because they have become more knowledgeable of Jewish texts, and the bracha that we say every day, Shalosh Asani Goy, is always a sore point in our discussions with non-Jews, because seemingly that implies that Jews are viewing non-Jews in an inferior light. And they're like, wow, didn't make me that. I made it. So we should change the bracha to She'asani Yisrael. And although that was, especially, you know, being written in the era of the Reform movement, where they wanted to change everything, it was quite a proposal. But he said, what do you want from me? I want to go back to the old Nusach. the Nusach of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Shesan Yisrael. So the reality is, if you do your homework carefully, even though the Vilna Gaon quotes that Girsa of the Gemara, not that that's what you should say. He doesn't advocate saying that, because the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, we see over here, now you can look at the handout, on the side that looks like the Shulchan Aruch, right? So here the Shulchan Aruch writes, Sarach Avarech B'chol Yom Shloa Sanei Goy, Shloa Sanei Yov, Shloa Sanei Isha. So if you take out your magnifying glass and you look at the Vilna Gaon, right, where do you find that? It's the Beir Agra there in the right margin toward the bottom. Not at the bottom, but toward the bottom, right before Machta Shekel, Chochma Shlomo, Beir Hetiv, then your Beir Agra. Have that? So if you look in Sif Dalid, which is about five lines down, Shaloh Asani, Kainu Berif Rambam, Vechainu B'Tosefta, Sof Brachos, V'Yushalmi Sham, that's where it is everywhere, except for the Bavli. Aval Girzis Sforim Shalonu, in our Gemaras we have Shasani Yisrael, Vechainu B'Rosh V'Tur. So the Gra notes that our version of the Gemara, the way it's printed, has the positive version rather than the negative version. The Rif and the Rambam weren't changing the Gemara. That was their version of the Gemara, right? They had a different version. So the reality is, I'm very surprised at this Vilna Gaon, because the Vilna Gaon is known for being very meticulous about Girsos. He himself, you know, has quite a few Hagahot Hagro on the Gemara, right? Working out the exact text. And it's generally accepted by later Meforshim that it's obvious that the correct text is Shalosh Sanei Goy. By parallel, all the rest are negative. So why should it be some positive, some negative? Plus, it's well known that the Gemara was censored by non-Jewish censors throughout the eras. And there was a code. They a lot of times had to change the original text in things having to do with non-Jews, because the non-Jews wouldn't tolerate anything else. Either it was that or burning the Talmud. Right? And sometimes even that didn't succeed. So for example, when a lot of times in the Gemara mentions Nochri, so our Gemaras have Kanani. Kanani means a Canaanite. What was the purpose of putting a Canaanite? So this way, if they're ever accused of discrimination or anything like that, so it refers to the Canaanites, doesn't refer to you. So the simple reading of the Gemara is that it should say Shlo Sanei Goy. There's no way out of that. I'm very surprised that the Vilna Gaon even tolerated the Gears of our Gemara. This is just noting it. Obviously, in the Rosh and the Torah too, right? Because those are also censored. It's Pashut. They point out nowadays they went back to the old manuscripts of the Rosh and the old manuscripts of the Torah, and that's what it says in the original version. It says Shalom Sanei Goy. There's no question whatsoever that the correct text is Shalom Sanei Goy, or Shalom Sanei Nochri. That's the Rambam has it. One of those two, but that it's written in the negative. So if that's the case, then after the Maskanas HaGemara, so the three brachas you say as we say them, maybe not in that order, but you have Shalom Sanei Goy, Shalom Sanei Nochri, Shalom Sanei Isha. So that just begs the question, so why is it in the negative? You know, we finally have something in the positive, Shasani Yisrael, and then we go ahead and change it to the negative based on the original version, so why be so negative? Why not solve all the cries of discrimination and bias against women and just read the following. Shasani Yisrael, Shasani Ben Chorin, and Shasani Ish. Great. And then the woman will say, Shasani Yisrael, Shasani ben Bas Chorin, or Ben Chorin, whatever in the generic way. And Shasani Isha. Solve all the problems, all the accusations of discrimination both against between Jew and non-Jew and between man and woman. So that's a question that I'd like to address with Hashem at length, not from my own ideas, but from what has been said about this. But before we get to that, so now we'll get, okay, so far so good, you with me? Now let's get to the next step. Now let's get to the controversial ending of the Gemara. Okay. Baruch Hashem, we're dealing with honed Gemara students now. So I think you'll appreciate this more than the class of Stern College students to whom I gave this over. Not because they also weren't brilliant, but I think it was too close for comfort. So let's take a look at this Gemara. This is a very, very fascinating Gemara in terms of understanding the language of Gemara. Okay? You're expecting to get a lot of money on this on the internet? Okay.
No.
Okay. Amar Leiv Elamai Mevarech. Let's keep in mind again that Rav Achar Bar Yaakov heard his son saying the bracha of Shelo Asani Bor in accordance with the position of Rabbi Meir. And then he told him, that's not really an appropriate bracha. Kuli Hai, Nami, you're supposed to say that? So he asked his father, what am I supposed to say? Say Shelo Asani Evan. So then the Gemara says, Hainu Isha. That's the same as Isha. Meaning, if you're already saying Shelo Asani Isha, then why do you have to say Shelo Asani Evan? So the Gemara answers, Evan Ziltfe. Evan Ziltfe. A slave is more degraded. This is a classic example where, when you're learning Torah texts, as a someone with my dean from Rabbi Schmidman from Shea University pointed out, our whole approach to Torah Hashem is that you have to push aside all of the biases and study the text, see what it says, analyze it. Because a modern thinker will see this Gemara, either slam it down and do a different Gemara, or worse, Chazal view women as slaves, I don't have anything to do with this religion. But the Torah teaches us that when you study text, even difficult text, you gotta open your mind, you gotta study, you gotta give the Torah a chance to blossom. Sometimes you'll come to grips with it, sometimes you won't. But it happens to be that by the time we're done with this, with the parish of the Rashi, then you understand exactly what the Gemara is saying. And not only that, you understand, and it opens up a window to other kinds of Gemaras as well, in terms of the phraseology of the language of the Gemara. Says Rashi, Hainu Isha, the La'inyan mitzvos Isha of Eved Shavin. The Gamrinan La La. Quotes the Gemara Chagiga, it appears also, I believe, in Kiddushin. It's a well known halacha that women are exempt from time bound commandments that are positive. Mitzvah saseh shazman gram. Women are chayiv in all negative commandments, with the exception of three. Anyone know what they are? It's a Mishnah Masechta Kiddushin. No, carbon paper. Yeah. That, first of all, that's a positive commandment. I'm talking about the chayiv and all negative commandments, with the exception of three. What are they? Three negative commandments that women are allowed to violate. They're not bound by it. One is What'd you say?
Fasting. No, it doesn't mean it doesn't pay them in the first place.
Fasting. Fasting.
The pass in the first form, it doesn't pay them in the first place. So.
I didn't hear what you said.
I was going to say fast in the first form, it doesn't apply to them anyway, so it's not a.
You forgive me, I don't know, my ears are stuffed. I still can't hear what you said, but alright.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that you're not right.
He said fast to the firstborn.
Oh, the fast to the firstborn?
Yeah. That doesn't apply to that anyway. So it's.
Oh, that's rabbinic. So let's talk about Torah commandments. One is a Kohenis, is allowed to become Tommy to Mason. Right, you could have Dr. Cyril Cohen, there's no problem in that. But have a Dr. Barry Cohen, okay, so that's a shiloh, but going to medical school and becoming tummy to cadavers, etc., that's not a topic for now. Can you say that the fact that events are going to save lives allows them to violate that? Or maybe they can navigate to not actually touch the cadavers, that's not a topic for now. But a female Kohenis, even though she's the daughter of a Cohen, is allowed to go to funerals, is allowed to come into contact with the dead. She's allowed to cut her payas, right? Even, you know, it's the hair that grows around here, which women also have, she's allowed to cut. And she's allowed to remove facial hair. I'm talking about the bearded lady. Many women have some facial hair, so that could be removed in any way they want, even with a razor. That's a good idea. Maybe cause it to grow back better. I don't know if that's true or not, that they say. But there's no. So that's what the Mishnah says. The chayiv and all negative commandments. Chutzmi Baal Tatam and Lemesim, Baal Takif, which is the prohibition of rounding the head, and Baal Tashlis, which is the prohibition of destroying the beard with a razor. But in positive commandments, they're chayiv only in non-time bounded ones, with many exceptions. What are the exceptions? So the Rambam points out that there are a total of six exceptions to the rule, where women are obligated even in time bound commandments, like Kiddush and Avdallah and Karban Pesach and slaughtering the Karban Pesach, at least by agency, Simchas Yom Tov, try to commit it to memory, and I never can quite do it. I get like 5 out of 6 to work on it. Okay, there are other exceptions to the rule. There are other mitzvahs they're exempt from, even though it's not time bound. But that's not a topic for now. So the Gemara makes it Gzeira Shava. There's a parallel text between Avodim and women that the slaves are chayiv in the same number of mitzvahs. What do you mean slaves are chayiv in mitzvahs? If they're Jewish, so of course they're chayiv in all mitzvahs. A Jewish slave has to put on tefillin also. Has to wear tzitzis. Has to say kriyat shema. Right? Has to hear shofar. Let's talk about a non-Jewish slave. A non-Jewish slave not chayiv in any mitzvahs. Okay, now I'm throwing in a caveat here. We're not discussing the morality of slavery now. Okay, look on aish.com, check up slavery according to Judaism. You see there are many, many, and Rav Hirsch discussed it, many interesting discussions about the Torah's view on slavery. Whether it allowed it, based on the fact that society allowed it and it just elevated it, you know, made it better, or whether it's more than that. Okay, that's not a discussion for now. It's a fascinating discussion, but not for me. So there's the concept of an Eved Kanani. What does it mean, an Eved Kanani? An Eved Kanani is a non-Jewish slave. I think we've discussed this before in these hallowed halls. Anybody know what an Eved Kanani is? I'd like to do research on this, but I think there's evidence in the Civil War there were many Jewish plantation owners, and their traditions within certain families that originally were slave families, that they used to do mitzvahs. Because they're non-Jewish, they're Jewish owners, follow the halacha.
Are those the instances where they choose to stay?
I'm sorry?
Are those the instances where the slave chooses to stay?
That's something else. That's a Jewish slave who's working for 6 years, and he says, I have to yes aduni, I'd rather stay, and then we put a hole in his ear and he stays till Yovel. But he was chayv in mitzvos during the first 6 years, and is still chayv in mitzvos during the next, whatever it is, till Yovel. We're talking about a non-Jewish slave. So how is a non-Jewish slave chayv in mitzvos? Anybody familiar? Yeah, go ahead.
He's in your house. Anyone is in your house has to. Oh,
so it's not quite as simple as that, but the point is, a Jew buys a non-Jew as a slave from someone else. Let's say he sells himself into slavery. He's taken captive in war, whatever the case is. Again, I'm leaving aside the whole hashkafic topic about it, the morality of that. That's not a topic for now. So he comes to the house, he's a non-Jew. He's having nothing. So the Torah says, we're not interested in you having non-Jewish slaves in your house because you're going to absorb their culture. So that they could stay for a while, you know, free lunch if you will, but either you free them or you have to convert them. Now what does convert them mean? They're slaves. They're not going to be Jewish, but they're going to be partially Jewish. So if they're male, they have to undergo circumcision and tefillah. If they're female, they have to undergo tefillah. And they become chayiv in all mitzvos except for time-bound mitzvahs. How do we know that? Because that's a gzeira shava lola. So it's only after the process of, let's call it, semi-conversion, that slaves are chayiv in mitzvahs. That's called an eved kanani. So now putting it all together, so the Rashi explains that hainu isha, right? That when you say shalo asani isha, what are you saying? So fill in the gaps here. If Rashi's saying that because a slave is chayiv in the same number of mitzvahs as women are. So what are you saying when you say Shalom Asani Isha? According to this equation the Gemara makes as explained by Rashi. What is the thrust of that bracha? Right, so Shalom Asani Isha means it's a praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the male recites for being obligated in all mitzvahs. Now again, all is not quite correct either for a male, because they're not chayiv in certain mitzvot, a kohanim, etc., and the certain mitzvot, they're not necessarily going to come up in their life. But the chayiv in time-bound commandments. So then the Gemara says, so what are you doing saying Shalom Asani Eved? Because what would Shalom Asani Eved mean? What would be the thrust of that? If the Gemara is making an equation, hainu isha, hainu eved, and Rashi explains that to mean chayiv in same mitzvot, so what would be the thrust of the bracha of Shalos Ani Eved?
Your time is yours.
I'm sorry?
Because they're not for different reasons.
So you're giving a nice, you know, a cook idea, but just simple. If the Gemara makes an equation between Eved and Isha, because they're both chayiv in the same number of mitzvos, So if we define Shalosh Hanisha to mean that the praise of being chayiv in all mitzvot, so what would Shalosh Hanisha be? Again, in the kash of the Gemara now, maybe you're giving the teretz. When the Gemara says Hainu Eved, Hainu Isha, so what? I'm sorry?
For some mitzvot. I think it's
there.
You said degraded, so it's just like they're in...
Oh, see, so you're giving the teretz. I'm in the kasha. Within the kasha of the Gemara, the Havmin of the Gemara, Hainu Eved, Hainu Isha, so what is the Gemara asking by that statement?
It's the same thing.
Shalosh Hanisha Isha is a praise of God for being chayiv in all mitzvot, and Shalosh Hanisha Eved is the male praise of God, or male Jewish... the Jewish male thanking Hashem for being chayiv in all mitzvos. So then the Gemara says, Eved Ziltfe. Now that answer needs analysis, but before we even get to the answer, this is an unbelievable insight as to what the Gemara means by these kinds of phraseologies. It's true in all spheres, except the Torah gets attacked more than other spheres, so it's important to defend it. If I say, I'll give an extreme example. You could sense this also. Let's say, and I'm not advocating this, okay? Let's say a professor or a rebbe or whatever throws out a question and a student gives a stupid answer. And the professor says, you're an idiot. What does that mean? Right? If you want to be analytical about it, it means... You know what the dictionary definition of an idiot is? Someone with an IQ between blah blah, okay, is capable of doing these functions but not those functions. That's what the person means. Of course not. In the context, it means, listen, you're in an advanced class here. We're learning advanced molecular thermodynamics. This is sloppy. Don't give such an answer in this class. It means... you better shape up, or you don't belong in this class. So that's what the word means. A whole drush? That's what that means? That's what that insult means? Yes, in context. Everything is in a context. So you made an equivalence, right? You made an equivalence. The person said, let's speak a little more nicely. The person said, you equal fool, right? But it's said in a specific context. A lot of times the Gemara does that. The Gemara makes these seemingly wild analogies, but it's said in a localized context. So I'll give you another example. The Gemara says in a certain context of kinyonim, right, talking about acquiring things. So we know that a boy or a girl, a man or woman above bar bat mitzvah has the ability to make a kinyon, to transact. A slave, although they might even be more brilliant than their master, and they have a Kanani now, has no ability to make a kinyan. Halachically, they have no ability to make a kinyan. Not because they're not a human being, because halacha does not recognize the acquisition powers of a slave. In the language of the Gemara, Mashakana Eved Kana Rabba. Whatever the slave acquires automatically becomes the possession of the master. So the Gemara above Mitzi has an expression. When it's talking about a slave being kona something, has a problem with it, how could it be? So it says, Eved Das Behema. What does that mean? So if you read it literally out of context, or if you're running www.kkk.com, looking for trouble, so you translate that to mean that slaves have animalistic knowledge. That's not what it means. It's not the simple reading of the words. The simple reading of the words in the context of the Gemara is that just like an animal cannot acquire objects, so too a slave can't. It's not saying because a slave is an animal. As far as halacha views the transactions in the world, right, a slave cannot transact, just like an animal can't transact. Okay, you follow? It's very important to understand the context. So here also, the Gemara makes an equivalent, Tainu Eved, Hainu Isha, in the limited context of mitzvah. So what the Gemara does parenthetically, not parenthetically, but what emerges from that is a window to be able to understand all these brachos. Because if the brachos were not about mitzvos, then what's the kasha of the Gemara? If the brachos are about social status, let's take an extreme position, right? Which Judaism certainly has been accused of. But to quote Rabbi Bleich in a different context, it's a canard. It has been accused of this, but it's a false accusation. Let's take an extreme position. Shlosh Hanigai, because goyim are worthless. Shlosh and Eved, because Avarim are worthless. And Shlosh and Isha, because they're not so worth, they're not so valuable. Right? They're dispensable. I'm being very extreme. Please don't misunderstand me. Let's say that's what it meant. Then the whole Gemara doesn't make sense. Because what do you mean, Hainu Eved, Hainu Isha? And the Rashi wouldn't make sense. So the thrust of the Gemara of the brachos, then we could extrapolate to mean, although the Gemara doesn't make this explicit, is that all the brachos are about mitzvahs. It doesn't say that, but it's reasonable to assume. But then if we put it all together, so then what we have then is shalosh sanigoyis, a praise or a bracha, expression of appreciation or recognition of. If you want to make it parallel, right? Shlosh sanigoyis, you know, let's give the thrust of that bracha, not just the meaning. Thank you for not making me a tree, right? It's not just bracha, right? What do the words mean? You didn't make me a non-Jew, but what is the thrust of that? What is the ramification of not being a non-Jew from the perspective of this bracha? I'm sorry?
I wasn't made as a.
Correct, but what's the ramification of that? That now I could, you know, wave the Israeli flag and be prouder, or now I'm.
With the opportunity to do more mitzvot.
That's what it sounds like, and I'm just feeling from the context of the isha. So shalosh sanigoy means I'm chayiv in more mitzvot than seven. Right? So, you know, I like to, you know, put it in a structure here. Shalosh sani eved is I'm chayiv in more mitzvot than 599. Where did I get that from? Because women are exempt from 14 mitzvahs. That's what the Rambam writes in the end of the list of mitzvahs. So I finally got the number right. I always used to fudge it. So let's call it 599. So that means I'm chayiving more than 599. Again, that's not quite right because there are many mitzvahs of Karbonos and Kohanim that are not right. But let's call it 599. Shlosh and Isha, then I'm chayiving more than 599. So now we're back to the question of the Gemara, Hainu, Hainu Isha. So we need to understand the answer. Eved ziltfe. The Eved is more degraded. So Rashi says, Afilo hachi mezulzala Eved yoser min isha. The Eved is more degraded. So Rashi doesn't explain, what does that mean? What's the rigor of that? What does that mean? So you could suggest, and it's social status. That shalosh sani Eved is, thank you for giving me more mitzvot, and a higher social standing. And then you get to Shlosh and Isha, that even with a more or less equivalent social standing, but you made Mechayim in all the mitzvahs. Right? You could say it that way. That Shlosh and Goy is more than seven. Shlosh and Eved is higher social standing plus more mitzvahs. And Isha is just more mitzvahs within the basic framework of same social standing. I'm sorry?
About learning Torah.
That could be, but that's also included in Eved. Eved's also not obligated to learn Torah, even though he's chayiv mitzvos, right? But I wanted to suggest another shot. I don't know if this is right, but the idea is true. And this is an idea I always like to give over. And I was especially taken by the fact that two cousins, who were both giants in their own right, without reading the other people's writings, both came up with exactly the same idea. And the two giants I referred to are Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, they were cousins. They happened to be, they were cousins. So sometimes they would ask halachic questions to Rabbi Soloveitchik, so I said, go ask my cousin. And he was the poser, even though he answered questions of his own also, but sometimes he would, what's the word, and give over a task to someone else.
Delegated
to him. Okay, so I always like charts, you know. What can I do? It said the following. I'll quote the beginning part of the Tshuva of Moshe. It's very, very telling. There was a Rabbi Kelmer. I'm not sure if it's him, but I know there's a Rabbi Kelmer who's the Rav in West Hempstead. Anybody know that region of the world, in Nassau County? No. No one here is from New York, right?
I have seen.
Oh, you're. You know where it is.
Yeah.
But you're not from New York.
No.
Oh, shit. I love this place. Icon Skolko, there's only in New York, that's where everything happens, and everything else suffers. So I'm being taught a lesson in humility. So he was asked a question by this Rabbi Yehuda Kelmer. So what am I supposed to tell all the Jewish feminists? They think the Torah is sexist and it's discriminatory, and how am I supposed to begin to broach this topic to them? So Baruch Hashem, Rav Moshe answered it. You know, get the viewpoint of a giant of the earth. So he writes several interesting ideas. Those who want to see the Chuv inside, it's very important. You don't have the time to see it in the morning for him, but it's very interesting Chuvah. So he says, the first step is, you should know, that from the Torah perspective, men and women have equivalent Kedusha. They were endowed by their Creator, as being equal members of Klal Yisrael. They were given a holy Torah, and they have equal Kedusha. And then he goes on to say, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu exempted women from certain mitzvahs, and he says, we don't know the reason why. Everyone says, why are women part of mitzvahs? Because they have to take care of families. It doesn't say that anywhere fundamental. It doesn't say it in the Torah Shebosav, it doesn't say it in the Torah Shebalpeh. That's an approach that some Rishonim have tried to glean, that maybe that's part of the wisdom. And it could be it is. But it could be it's something totally different. Kaplan, for example, in his writings, has a whole different shot why women are exempt from the time balance. He has a whole shot that women's internal spiritual personality don't need those mitzvahs that are bound by time. Their, if you will, their personality is beyond time. Okay, whatever the case is. Rav Hirsch says they don't need so many mitzvahs because they tend to be more spiritual by nature. So that's why they don't need as many mitzvahs to pick up their physical side, because the default is more spiritual. All right, whatever the reason is. So then he suggests the classic reason that in terms of family responsibilities. Then he goes on to some other topics. But the topic that relates to us is the first idea. And what's the proof? How do you know? Maybe this is a modern, feel-good kind of approach that is just apologetic. It says, well, you open up a Chumash. And what was the singular event that ultimately made Klal Yisrael who they were? That made them into a unique nation? Asher Bach Avon Mikol Hamim. And what follows? How is the chosenness of the Jewish nation reflected? V'nas l'onos taraso. So Rav Sajagon writes in the Munus Videos. So it gets very tricky. So in a moment. If you take this away, it gets very tricky to define Jewish identity. Is Ha'am Shelanu Eino Am Beli HaTorah. That's the Rav Sajagon writes. So without Torah, we have no nationhood. The United Nations accused the State of Israel of racism. Zionism is racism. Why? Because you're favoring people from a certain race. So they say, no. Look at the State of Israel. We have whites and blacks and yellow people and green people and blue people. All over the world. So, yeah, but what makes them Jewish? Why are they called Jewish? So if you're speaking from a religious perspective, Pashut. Because they're either descendants of those of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, those who stood at Har Sinai, or those who converted to that commitment of Har Sinai. And that's it. What do you mean racism? Religionism, okay. That itself, maybe you are more polite, but that's not racism. But if you're coming from the perspective of a secular Zionist, so what defines Judaism? Just culture? That's not going to fly. And you're going to be accused of Zionism as racism. That's very interesting. That of Sajagon, that's a solution, that's the ultimate solution to that attack. But be that as it may, so how did the Torah introduce Mamre Sinai? So Hashem tells Moshe, Kosomar Leves Yaakov, Visagi Levnei Israel. Go tell the house of Jacob, and go tell the children of Israel. Okay, same thing. So we know the famous Rashi, Beis Yaakov, which gave its name to the whole women's school movement, right? Beis Yaakov, Elo HaNashim. Bnei Yisrael, Elo HaAnashim. So in other words, the opening valley, if you will, of Har Sinai is addressed to the totality of the Jewish people. And not only that, as like an amorphous whole, but pointing out that there's a Beis Yaakov and there's a Bnei Yisrael. Interestingly, to the Beis Yaakov it's Tomar, and to the Bnei Yisrael it's Tagi. A very famous Rashi there. But even without getting involved in that Rashi, you see that they're different approaches. They're both part of the package here in an equal way, But they're not. You don't deal with both in the same way. It's not egalitarian in that sense, that everyone does the same thing. They're separated, tomar tagi. So if that's the case, then, well, one second. But we say, I met my Rebbe, Rosh Hefter Shlita, who was speaking here at the Achikala. So he always said, he tended sometimes to with sarcasm, so he said, Kedusha. I spoke about this before. He speak about holiness. Holy, holy, holy. He didn't do that, that's me. But what do you mean something holy? I went to the Kotel, it was very holy. Right? I was at a Shabbos table, it was very holy. What does that mean? Holy bagel. Right? I just had we celebrated a son put on tefillin, right? So we took him out the holy bagel for breakfast. That's a play on words, there's a hole in the bagel. Okay, very nice. And it's in the holy city. What does that mean? What does it mean holy? So as in anything. You want to be able to quantify it or qualify it. What do you mean? So one main qualification is mitzvos. You want to know how holy you are? How much do you got to do? How many ways of connecting to Hashem do you have? So how do you know that that's true? Because we say it every time, every day, many times. Asher, kiddushonu, b'mitzvosav. Why are we holy? Because we have mitzvos. Why do you speak about Kedushas Yisrael over the inherent Kedusha of just having a soul from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that all of humanity have? Because Kedushanu and Tzvosav. We have more than seven. So if that's the case then, well, wait a second. So now you're going to fall apart here, right? So now men have more Kedusha than women, right? Because they have more mitzvos. Okay, now, I'm not going to fall off the earth if that's true. Because we're not talking about, you know, Kedusha and Kedusha. We're talking about Kedusha and Kedusha. But Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein both said, but that's false. That's not true. Women and men have the same Kedusha. But wait, but they're not chayav in the same mitzvot. I asked my Rabbi about this. I said, what about the Bnei, Asher Kedushanu B'Kedushoso Shel Aaron? Are you a Kohen by any chance? Yeah, because the class was Kohenless, so I was kind of hoping we got a Kohen in. But no problem. So what does that mean? Asher Kedushanu B'Kedushoso Shel Aaron. It sounds like I want to have more Kedusha. I said, right. That's what I said. So I said as a joke, we should have an anti-Kohen movement. No fair. They have more Kedusha than us. Who did that? Who did that? That was Korach. That was Korach's rebellion. No fair. Kohanim have more Kedusha than us. Now, ultimately, he wanted to be over. He wanted to be the leader, right? But the philosophy he created was no fair. The philosophy of egalitarianism, right? So if that were true, that men had more Kedusha than women, I think we could live. Maybe some women wouldn't be able to. Maybe some men wouldn't be able to. It's not fundamentally a flawed idea when you have levels of Kedusha, but Rav Moshe Feinstein or Soloveitchik said, but it's wrong. Because Har Sinai was, the Torah was given equally to both. So how do you understand the fact that women are exempt from mitzvahs? So I'd like to chart it out this way. Rav Moshe didn't make a chart, but here you have Nochrim, okay? You have non-Jews. So they have a degree of Kedusha that is expressed by seven mitzvahs. Okay? Then you have Avodim. And they have a degree of Kedusha that's expressed by 599. And then you have women who have a degree of Kedusha that's expressed by 613. Again, that's not quite true because that includes the Kohanim Kedusha, but we'll make it simple. And then they have 14 Piturim. They're exempt from 14 mitzvahs. It's like a pardon, if you will. You don't have to do this. You don't have to go to this shir. What, you're out of the orbit? You're not relevant to it? No, you are relevant to it. But you're exempt. You did that requirement already. You don't need this. It's not that you're, in halacha, we use the term, you're not mufka. You're not removed from it. You're exempt. I give an analogy. A king, as Rav Soloveitchik quoted this analogy, a king is exempt from testifying in court. Generally. It's beneath his dignity. He's exempt from the whole concept of justice. It's not relevant to him. Of course not. He has an exemption. That's what he made an analogy that women are also, he suggested, Rav Soloveitchik, that women are also disqualified from testimony. So he suggested it's the same idea. It's the same idea, that women are majestic princesses. They don't have to appear in court. Beneath their dignity to appear in court. The same as a king. So this is the realm of Noshim Yehudios, right? This is Jewish women. And then you have men who have the same Kedusha, and they don't have the Peturim. You see the difference? Again, it's just a chart. Slaves are exempt from mitzvos is the reflection of the fact that they have less Kedusha. Because they're only partial Jews. They only went to the mikveh and had circumcision in order to become pseudo-Jewish, partially Jewish. Women are Jewish by birth, so they have the full Kedusha. But they're exempt from certain mitzvahs. Now, a proof to this, or a ramification of this, would be, let's say a slave wants to volunteer tefillin. One can make a very good case that it's totally irrelevant. Unless you're going to say that maybe a non-Jew could volunteer tefillin. There's such a discussion about that. Let's say he wants to make a bracha. Let's say a non-Jew wants to make a bracha. There's such an idea of non-Jews volunteering mitzvahs, right? Let's say a non-Jew wants to put on tzitzis.
Okay.
There's a Rambam about that, that maybe it can be done. Let's say he says, I want to make a bracha, just like you guys. Does that make sense? Now, I'm not going to get involved in the formality whether it's a bracha levatola, because they're not bound by bracha levatola, right? But what are they going to say? Baruch Atah Hashem, okay, Melech Olam, Asher Kedishanu Mitzvot, it's not relevant. Let's say a slave wants to make such a bracha on tzitzis. It's not relevant to say to make such a bracha. When it comes to women, we know, even though it's machalok as Ashkenaz fire, we'll finish it off in a second, that women do volunteer the bracha. How could they volunteer the bracha? Asher kishanu, v'tzivosa, v'tzivonu. So forget about the v'tzivonu, right? That's a separate discussion. That's going on the Klal Yisrael. But what do you mean asher kishanu, v'tzivosa? But the woman doesn't have the sanctity as reflected by that mitzvah. So the simple answer, I think, is that they do. They're just exempt. So if Allah allows them to volunteer, and according to those who've shown that they could volunteer the bracha too, it makes sense to say Asher Kedushan HaMitzvah, because they're relevant to this mitzvah too. They're relevant to the Kedusha inherent within that mitzvah. If you will, the divine concept that mitzvah represents, even though they're not obligated to actually do it. Now, Sfardim hold, you don't say the bracha. But that's for more technical reasons. That's not because they don't have the Kedusha as reflected by that mitzvah. It's because either they can't say the Sivanu, because they're not actually commanded. That's one objection. And the other objection is, it's the bracha levatala, because they're not obligated. Since they're not obligated, they're not allowed to say the bracha. Right, so why do Ashkenazim hold they're allowed to? So that's a whole discussion about the nature of bracha levatala, when it's allowed and when it isn't, and so on and so forth. But the actual text of Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosav, that there's no objection to, no matter how you slice it, because they have the full condition. So if you go like this, and now we have a very nice flow of what we say in the morning. Shalos ani goy, move me over to that realm. Shalos ani eved, move me over to that realm. Meaning he gave me full kedusha. Shalos ani isha, how would you phrase that precisely? I already thanked you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for giving me full kedusha. Now what, the extra level?
No exemptions.
No exemptions, right? So that, perhaps, we could stick into those three words. Eved, zil, tfei. That a slave in the hierarchy of Kedusha is less. And therefore it makes sense to say two brothers.